It is an absolute honor to welcome to the show this week someone that I would call an inspiration, someone that I look up to, someone who I don't actually really know, that I've never really talked to outside of a couple exchanges here and there, but I feel like I know them. I'm, of course, talking about Michelle Smallman. Michelle, I have to tell you this. You are one of the reasons that I would say that I got into podcasting, because your podcast, Small Talk, that you co-host with our guy, Steve Cerruti, is my favorite podcast in the world. And I'm a podcast producer. I've been doing this for years. I cannot tell you how many hundreds of different podcasts that I have listened to through the years. Yours is my favorite. And I'm not saying that to butter you up. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And I say that because a couple reasons. There's a lot of friends out there who are in a room telling their dumb jokes and laughing together and say, oh gosh, we should have a podcast together. We would be great. And then they try and it crashes and burns and it's not as good as they thought it was, like it was in their bedroom. You guys, the conversations that you guys have are so dumb, are so stupid. I never know what to expect every week. It's a new treat every week. It is my favorite show that's gotten me through some tough times in my life. I remember in 2017, pretty much just after you and I crossed paths, I was getting to ESPN just as you were leaving and you had started your podcast with Steve kind of around that time. And if you remember, as I'm sure you may have experienced in your first year at ESPN, it's a hard year. For me, it was my first year out of college. A lot of nights, weekends, and overnights. The what am I doing with my life? Why? How did I end up in farm town, Connecticut? Like, I was not a happy person. And it was podcasts that I was listening to that were getting me through my day. As you know better than anyone, you form an intimate relationship with the person that is coming through your earbuds. And it was you and Steve that were getting me through some tough times, that were giving me hope to just keep grinding and giving me some energy and some laughs when I needed it. Ditto during the pandemic. In the early days of the pandemic, you guys were pushing out stellar podcasts about Taylor Swift's album drops, about the A-plus content that you guys were shelling out. And I mean, Michelle, you and Steve, I cannot tell you how much you mean to me. And I'm really glad that I've gotten the chance to tell you that. So Michelle, thank you for being here. And thank you for everything that you've done for me.
Oh my gosh, that is quite an intro. Thank you so much. I am so incredibly flattered because, well, first of all, that's just so kind of you. And I'm so glad that we're getting to have this conversation and connect in this way. But isn't that kind of the goal of all of this, is to make someone feel something or make someone feel like they know you? Because you could tune into any sort of media outlet. There's so many different options these days, whether it's TV or podcasts or YouTube, social media. Everyone's on TikTok now. There's so many different ways to find content or content creators. And to find someone that really feels like, this is something that I'm going to tune into every week, and I know these people, and I'm going to make them a part of my daily routine. That's the goal of all of this. So I'm so glad that you connected with our stupid pod, because as you mentioned, who knows what we even talk about at the time. Most of it's unplanned. So it's kind of just a pod about nothing. So the fact that it has meant something to you means a lot to me. So thank you for saying that.
It's the only podcast where when it hits my feed, when a new episode hits my feed, I have to listen to this. I have to listen to this today. I don't delay it. And the best thing, the most important thing in this world of overflowing content that you can watch and listen to, is when you can create a sense of fandom or community around a show. There's a lot of content out there, but there's not that much that creates that. The shows, the things that do stand out are the ones that make you feel like I can connect with you, or I can connect with a fan who listens to Small Talk. I genuinely believe that if you guys hosted a Small Talk get together in St. Louis, that I would buy the first plane tomorrow out to St. Louis to come meet you and the rest of the Shelleys, which is your fans.
Well, that's so funny that you mentioned that, because at the very beginning, this was, I think, even pre-pandemic, we had a Small Talk meetup and there were people from St. Louis that came, but other people from other states drove in. There was a pair of friends that I forget, I think they were living in West Virginia at the time and were driving to Chicago, and they stopped in St. Louis to meet us at the Small Talk meetup, which was insane to me. It just absolutely blew my mind, because it's one thing to have someone who might know me from my day job, which is the host of the morning show on 101 ESPN here in St. Louis, and want to come and hang out and maybe talk St. Louis sports. It's quite another for people to derail their trip somewhere so they could drive in town and meet us. And you know what was amazing? Every person that showed up, I would hang out with. They truly were people that I would have been friends with / became friends with afterwards. And that is what's amazing about having a community that listens, because if you want to listen to someone talk about the Cardinals, you have to come through me on 101 ESPN. You have to come through me to get to the Cardinals. With a podcast, you're coming up because you want to hear what I have to say, or because you want to hear what Steve has to say. And so I think that kind of fosters a little bit more of, for lack of a better term, brand loyalty, because people actually are choosing to listen to you and connect with you.
I'm not into pop culture or reality TV at all, but if there's some big story that happens, it's Michelle Smallman in Small Talk that I want to come to hear the instant reaction.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, then you're going to hate the next episode that's coming out, because there's a lot of reality TV. I ran into a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills the last time I was in New York and hung out with her. So that's basically the entire next episode. So I'm not sure if you'll be a fan of it.
Sneak peek. I can't wait. How did you and Steve first get the idea for doing Small Talk?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So Steve and I met in Bristol at ESPN. We both worked on the same show, Russell and Canal. We were both producers of the show and became fast friends. And that is really rare. You always kind of want to like the people that you work with. But as you know, when you work on a daily show, whether it's radio or TV, it's a very intimate environment. You're talking to and spending time with these people more than you are your family or your significant other, because you're constantly having to communicate and come up with ideas and spend time together. So Steve and I clicked right away. We became friends right away. And I remember one of our bosses had come up to us and said, and granted, this was many years ago. This was like 2016, 2017. So podcasts were around, but they certainly were not the monster that they are today. And they said, we need more podcast content. Is there anything that you guys can come up with that might be like a sneak peek or a sneak behind the curtain of what's going on in the show? So we started, when we were at ESPN, a podcast called the Post Show Podcast, where we would pop on the air and we would talk about what happened on Russell and Canal, give fans a little view behind the curtain. And it ended up morphing into us debating about Beyonce and Rihanna and all of these different things. But that's truly what we would talk about during commercial breaks or when we were at lunch. So it was kind of Small Talk before Small Talk. And then I left ESPN to come home to host the morning show in St. Louis. And Steve left ESPN to host an NBA podcast. And so many people had listened to the Post Show Podcast. We thought, maybe we should just continue this. And more importantly, we want an excuse to catch up every week and an excuse to talk to each other so that we don't lose touch. So we started Small Talk and it just kind of grew from there.
I could talk about Small Talk until I'm blue in the face, but I'm sure that's not what the listeners here want. But hey, go check out Small Talk wherever you get your podcast. You won't regret it. Best show out there. I want to talk to you about a couple different things. So you mentioned earlier that you went back to St. Louis after leaving ESPN. And what I'm curious about is that, so me and you are a bit similar. We're kind of adventurous people. We like going new places, new experiences. I think that they're what fuels me. I get a sense that they really fuel you and jazz you up as well. What's interesting to me is that you chose to go back home to St. Louis, where you're from, where you had already worked before. Why did you make that decision to go back home, knowing that you're such a person who likes new things?
Well, I got the opportunity to host a morning show, and I had been a producer my entire career for, gosh, 8 years at that point, maybe. I don't want to do the math because it's been so long, but I was always somebody that was behind the scenes that would also be on air, but I would pop in and do something here, or pop in and do something there. And when I was in St. Louis the first time, when I was a producer, I had started to expand my role as a host. I was hosting the Rams player show when they were here in St. Louis, and hosting high school football coverage on TV here. Just kind of expanding my role on air. And then when I got to ESPN, I was more of a producer. And then once we got on Russillo and Canal, Steve and I would pop on air, I don't know, maybe once a show here or there, but it was never a heavy role. And even though I am someone who very much likes an experience and likes to go new places and experience new things, I also am someone that loves a challenge. And the fact that I had never been a full-time talent before, and that I would get the opportunity not only to host a show, but host a morning show in a really big and, in my opinion, important sports market with teams that I was super familiar with and actually cared about, that was a dream scenario for me.
Wow. So what has been the highlight of that experience for you so far, getting to, you know, be, I mean, listen, like, I didn't say this in the intro, but you're a local celebrity. You're kind of a big deal. You're a blue check mark. I see you with all your advertisements on Instagram. Like, you're a big deal.
No, not at all. But I actually just like love promoting brands, especially locally, that I care about and that I believe in and that I want people to be familiar with. That's one thing that's kind of cool about having a platform of any sort, is that if, like, for instance, my friend from high school, Joe, opened up the best pizzeria in town. And it's truly the best pizza I've ever had in my entire life. And that includes when I've been to Italy. And I'm so proud of him. And he doesn't pay me to promote it, but I want to tell everybody, you need to get this pizza, because I want them to not only support my friend, but to have this experience. Like, if you're coming to St. Louis, I don't want you to have garbage pizza. I want to make sure that you're going to the right spot. So that's one thing that is cool about getting to promote companies, is that I genuinely believe in all the places that I talk about. But the highlight of my tenure, my second tenure at 101 ESPN, without question, is the Blues winning the Stanley Cup and me getting to cover it. And more importantly, getting to cover the parade. Getting to walk the parade route with the players and interview them and experience it from that vantage point is something that I will forever cherish and hold close to my heart. And I will call it the best day of my career. I could host Good Morning America, and that will be the single best day of my career by far. It was everything you could ever want, Troy. I mean, not only had the Blues never won, and so you were finally rewarded chasing that elusive championship. It was such a lovable team. It was about greatness. But more importantly, St. Louis loves their teams. I mean, we don't have the mountains. We don't have the beach. We have sports. It's what we do. It is such a big part of us. And so many people thought they would never, ever, ever see the Blues win. And that day, on the parade route, there were tens of thousands of people lining the streets of downtown, and the players were in the crowds with the fans. They were drinking with them. The players would find elderly people, or maybe people who were disabled, who couldn't get to the front. They would grab them out of the crowd so that they could touch the cup. They were pushing some elderly people who were in wheelchairs down Market Street, which is our main street that leads down to the arch. They wanted every fan to have their moment with the cup and to truly experience this, because it was such a massive deal for everyone. And to see that many people come together and be just overtaken by joy, it was the most galvanizing experience that I've ever been a part of. And it was a really, really special day.
What do you find most fulfilling about your job as an on-air host in St. Louis?
The most important thing to me is that I hear from a lot of people who say, when we drive to work in the morning, or when we're driving our kids to school, our daughters get to listen to you, and they love listening to you, and they think, hey, maybe that's something that I can do one day. Because people always ask me, is this, you know, did you want to do this when you were a kid? And I said, no, I didn't even know being a sports talk radio host was an option, because I never saw someone who looked like me occupy that seat. So the fact that there's little girls in St. Louis that are driving to school with their parents, their moms or dads, and they hear my voice over the air, and they think, maybe I could do that one day. By far, that's the best part of the job.
That's amazing. I love to hear that. You are an inspiration to many, clearly. What do you say? Because I mean, in my, you know, neck of the woods podcasting, we kind of look down upon the radio people. I laugh at my coworkers who are still on radio. I'm like, how? Like, you're still there. We're over here. We're the future. You're the past. What do you say to the idiots like me who say that?
Well, I understand, because that is where media has evolved in the audio space. Everybody wants things on demand. We want to listen to our podcasts whenever we want to, but our show is also a podcast. It was some of our biggest chunk of listenership is people that download the podcast every day on the 101 ESPN app. And St. Louis is different in that way. We're really parochial in a lot of senses. And I think St. Louis really likes traditional radio. And so for us, it feels like we kind of have the best of both worlds because we know our audience really likes to listen to terrestrial radio. And those who maybe don't get to catch the entire show can get us on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. Another thing that you had made a big thing of on Small Talk, I think during the pandemic, you decided to do 75 hard, which was something that I loved kind of hearing about your journey. Can you tell the listeners what it is and what that experience was like for you?
Sure. Actually, let me pull up the app here. I still have it.
There's a 75 hard app?
There is.
Have you done it again?
I've flirted with it. I did delete it. I thought that I still had it. I have it. I lied. So 75 hard is a 75 day challenge, which is why it's called 75 hard. And it is 2 45-minute workouts a day. One of them has to be outside. You have to take a progress photo of yourself, 10 pages of reading, and it has to be nonfiction or a self-help book. You have to drink a gallon of water, follow a diet with no cheat meals and no alcohol. All of that for 75 days.
And you couldn't do coffee either, right?
So I am just a psychopath. Same. And as if this wasn't enough, I wanted to remove coffee from the equation. So what happened was during the pandemic, I think we were all kind of struggling with one thing or another. And for me, it was consistency. I'm the type of person that I need a challenge. I'm trying to run a half marathon in every state, or, you know, there's just always a goal that I have. I am a very goal-oriented person. And during the pandemic, we could not go to the gym. And I just found myself not having any sort of routine. And I needed something to pour myself into and something that would provide me a little bit of consistency. So someone had recommended this to me. I looked it up and I was like, oh, 75 days, I can totally do this. And I am addicted to coffee. Working on a morning show, you drink a lot of coffee. You have to stay up late.
Italian.
Come on. I mean, I'm Italian. I work on a morning show. It's just, we're going to drink a lot of coffee. But I just thought, if I'm really going to do this, a lot of this is not going to be a challenge for me. I love to read. I have no problem not drinking for 75 days. What would be the worst thing I could put myself through? And giving up coffee would be it. So I decided to throw that into the mix. So I talked about it with my trainer at the Missouri Athletic Club, Paul. Shout out to Paul at the MAC. And he's like, okay, I'm going to do it with you and we'll push each other.
Wow.
And so we both did it together. 75 days. We completed all of the tasks and would hold each other accountable. And it was actually really cool. You talk about a sense of community and a galvanizing thing. I talked about it on air a lot. And so many people that listened to the show were like, I'm going to do this too. And so they jumped aboard. And we had all of these people in St. Louis doing 75 hard at the same time. And I just think it was really beneficial for some people during that time to have something, especially from a health standpoint, to focus on.
What was the hardest part of 75 hard?
Well, not having coffee was miserable. I mean, when my feet hit the floor, I don't even have both eyes open and I'm thinking about coffee. Okay, so you understand. And I love it so much. So that was really difficult. But the thing about 75 hard is, for you to truly do it, you have to do one of the 45-minute workouts outside. And it doesn't matter if it's snowing, raining, 100 degrees, like it is in St. Louis right now, no excuses. So having to get up sometimes, if I had a packed day, at 3:30 in the morning and go run outside for 45 minutes, or braving a monsoon, which I did once, that was difficult, but you feel very proud of yourself and accomplished after you're done. All of those days that you had to force yourself to get outside and do it, it's all worth it.
What constitutes a workout necessarily? Like, is a long walk, a 45-minute walk, is that a workout?
Yeah. So I did that a lot of days because, you know, if you're working out twice a day, there's some fatigue that's going to set in.
Sure.
And I'm a multitasker. I really love a walk and talk. So if I wasn't going on a run, I would go on a walk and I would either I love a call or a FaceTime. So I would call one of my girlfriends, catch up with them, or I would listen to podcasts. That's one way that I was really able to bang out a lot of podcasts during that time.
Still waiting on that feature where you can leave a voicemail on FaceTime, right?
What the hell? It's 2022. How can we not leave a FaceTime voicemail?
Such a good point. Such a good point. On Small Talk, I think early, it might have been your New Year's resolution going into 2022, or you just said it that it was something that you were working on. You said that you were just not going to give a fuck anymore. And like that's kind of just your motto now. So what does that look like for you? And why have you decided to make that your mantra?
So I saw this thing on Instagram. It's from Good Design Advice. And I just think that they give out really great advice. And I saw it come up on my feed one day. And it said something, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have it right in front of me, but it said something to the effect of, you're dying. Like right now we're all dying. And one day we're all going to be in the ground. So burn hot, burn the candle at both ends, go for it, whatever it is, go for it. Because you never know what's going to happen in life. So you might as well take a chance and do what you want to do now. And I really thought about that. And I thought, you know what? A global pandemic just happened and we were all forced to stay inside for a year plus. We never thought that would happen. And I just don't want to let my life pass me by without doing things that I want to do, regardless of what other people think. And I think when you're in the public eye in any capacity, there's this wave of commentary that comes at you all day, every day on social media. We have a text line on the show. Michelle, I love this about you. Michelle, I hate this about you. Michelle, amazing point. Oh, Michelle, you're a dumbass. I can't stand you. It's just this constant wave of commentary that you absorb at some point. And I just made the executive decision to not listen to any of the noise, good or bad, and only do what I want to do and what feels good to me and do things that I'm proud of. And if other people don't like it, that's their problem. You know, of course, I don't want to hurt anyone or be a bad person. Like I still want to be a good person, but I just think so many of us live by the rules that society has constructed for us or what the general public has constructed for us. And I don't want to do that anymore because I look at a lot of people who do what they're supposed to do and they're miserable. They're absolutely miserable. And what works for you might not work for me. So I'm just going to do whatever feels good to me.
And does the praise that comes your way, the criticism that comes your way, can you truly just set it aside and not take it into account and not let it take up anything up here? Or do you someone says something great about you and you believe the hype, and then someone says something bad about you and you're like, gosh, like what should I really not have said that? You second guess yourself. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, of course. What I have learned in this industry, especially being not only a woman in this industry, but the only woman at my station, the only one, is that some people are just not going to like me strictly because of the fact that I'm a woman. And I have learned that a lot of the times the negative things they say to me have nothing to do with me and everything to do with them. And they are projecting their own insecurities or their own issues onto me. And that's not my problem. That's a them problem that I don't need to deal with. And, you know, the praise is great. And mostly I mean, I'm really happy that someone would enjoy something that I would do so much that they would take time out of their day to say that to me. Because most normal people will listen to the show or listen to the pod and they'll enjoy it and then they'll go about their day. Because when you like something, you don't necessarily take the time out of your day to tell someone about it. So I always take that one with a little more weight because the average person doesn't necessarily think about that, the fact that they should do that. So I really like to let people know I hear you and I appreciate you for saying that to me. And one time somebody told me, if you don't have haters, you're not doing this right, because that means you're not resonating with anyone. So I appreciate the haters too. But I also realized that 9 times out of 10, the fact that they have something negative to say towards me has really nothing to do with me.
So obviously, if anyone who's been listening to this so far knows that you've got your shit together, you're a badass.
I hope so.
You're incredibly well spoken, but you know we all struggle with things. Kind of an idea or a theme of this podcast is like, hey, you know, we're in our 20s or early 30s and still trying to figure it out. There's no script for us to follow. We don't know exactly what we're doing. Just gotta trying to live what we think is our best life, but we don't know, and we make wrong decisions and we backtrack and we shouldn't have said that, and we shouldn't have done that. So I'm just wondering, what is it that you are still struggling with? What is it that you are still working on? Maybe it's something with social media, or you're on your phone too much, or you consume too much Netflix or whatever.
Oh my gosh, I struggle with so many things. That's why I have so many goals, because I'm so self-critical. No one is as critical of me as I am, which is a blessing and a curse, as you can imagine. But I, in addition to the burn hot, I've really tried to take this year and self-reflect a lot and think, what am I pouring my time into? Am I really maximizing the time that I have? And I would say there's two things that I'm still really working on this year. Number one, as you mentioned, is phone consumption, because I think, again, to bring it back to the pandemic, we all had nothing to do. And our way to stay connected to people was to text and FaceTime and get on social media. And so that became, it was already a habit before, but I think it became more pronounced during that time. So I've enacted a rule in my home. It's called the St. Jetersburg rule. And I got a basket. I'm trying to be more eco-friendly. So instead of using paper towels, I got all of these reusable paper towels, and I have them in this little basket. And when I come into the house, I put the phone in the basket, and I, for at least a couple hours, go about my day, whether that's working out or reading a book or organizing something, doing something out in the yard, whatever that is, I'm going to unplug from my phone for a few hours. And for those that don't get the reference, there was a famous lore about Derek Jeter, that he had this home in St. Petersburg that was called St. Jetersburg. And when phones started becoming more of a thing, cell phones, he would make everyone put their cell phone in a basket before they went inside in St. Jetersburg. So I've even told my friends and my family when they come over, I'm like, put your phone in the basket, because I don't want to have you sitting at the dinner table looking down at your phone, reading something that you saw on Twitter. Like, it's a rare moment that we're together. I really want to savor this time that we have. So that's one thing that I've been super cognizant of this year, is to put the phone away, because nothing bums me out more, Troy, that when I go out to dinner, I see a couple sitting there and they're not speaking to one another. They're both looking down at their phones. I'm like, why are you living in this fake digital world when you could be living your actual life? So that's one thing that I've really been focusing on. And I think the second thing, you know, as far as from a career standpoint, is that I've really been trying to kind of find something that's very uniquely me, and kind of something that I feel proud to use as a calling card for myself, if that makes sense. So like, for instance, a lot of guys on our station were former players, and that's what their role is. They certainly are multifaceted, and that's not their only role, but that's one thing that they're such an expert at. You know, Jamie Rivers played for the Blues. He was a professional hockey player. He is an expert. Brad Thompson played for the Cardinals, won a World Series. He's a baseball expert. Some guys are really into analytics, which is not really my jam. My co-host Randy Carricker is Mr. St. Louis. He's been in this market his entire career and has been the voice of St. Louis for like 40 years. So I kind of, for a couple of years, was like, I love my job. I'm from here, and I understand what the St. Louis sports fan wants to hear about, but what is going to be my thing? And so this year I've really decided that I want to be the best possible interviewer that I can. And so I spend hours researching our guests, even if it's somebody that I have on every week, like Adam Wainwright, I spend at least an hour. It's one of the reasons the phone's in the basket, because I spend probably 30 minutes to an hour researching every guest. I have watched so many YouTube clips on great interviewers, whether it's Larry King or Oprah, and just really looking at different interviewing tactics and styles and what works and how to extract the best emotion out of people. And it's really interesting, because so many people who've been very successful in the interview space have very conflicting ideologies about what's best. Like, Larry King is very short. He'll be like, "And how did you feel?" Where Oprah kind of takes more of a long and winding a path to get you there. But I just think trying to find a style of interviewing that works for me and really be the best interviewer that I can be has been a goal of mine, and something that I'm certainly working on all the time.
So I love both of what you just said there. I've got two follow-ups. I'll start with the latter. What is your, after you know your research and practice, what is your interview philosophy now?
I think that what I have learned doing this for so long is that you have your questions. I have, let's say, 5 to 7 questions that I prepare per guest, and I maybe use one of them. It's you want to be researched and know your subject, but to me, God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. You need to listen twice as much as you talk. And I find that half of the time, the questions that I prepare that I've really thought about how I'm going to tee somebody up for something, I don't even use because they'll say something that I want to follow up on or you know, I want to pivot into something else based on something that they've said. So I would say I don't even really necessarily have a defined style. In that it kind of changes daily, but I would say I try to be a little bit more pointed and quick with my questions if I can.
And then on the phone thing, me and my friends in Connecticut that we worked at ESPN with, I enacted a screenless Saturday rule. We would go out for screenless Saturday breakfast every Saturday morning. We would go to a new spot in West Hartford and Farmington and Avon or wherever. We would just find it. We would go, we'd leave our phones in the car, hang out there for 2 hours, and then like go on a walk or a little hike or some type of adventure, screenless, just being with each other. And then we were all at a ESPN wedding a couple weeks ago as well, and we went screenless for the wedding. We left the phones in the hotel rooms.
I love that.
And we were just there. And some people are like, yeah, like some people were like, wait, you want us, because they hadn't done the screenless thing before and they were a little put off by the idea of it. So I'm just kind of curious, when you say, hey, you're in my house, phone in the basket, what are people's reactions?
Most people are like, can I put my ringer on just in case someone tries to get in touch with me? I'm like, yeah, of course. And people will go over there and they'll pull it out of the basket and they'll check it, their notifications or whatever. And it's not, I'm not being super, super strict about it. But my entire point is that I appreciate you and I want to savor this time that we have together. Because as you get older, Troy, it's harder and harder to get together with your friends.
Yes.
And it's harder and harder to make time to get together with your family. Like, I'm really lucky that my family, we're Italian, so we do Sunday dinner and we try to all get together every Sunday, which is so special and great. But I know not every family has that luxury and they don't make it as much of a priority. But if I'm spending time with my friends, I don't care about what's happening on Instagram and I don't care about what's happening on Twitter. I want to spend time with them.
And you're still anti-TikTok, right?
Oh, that's a whole saga. So I was not into TikTok and I'm still a little apprehensive, but I did do my first one for the station. Wow. I understand. Yeah, their whole point was this is where all the people are going. It's an entirely new platform, younger demo, which I get. But my whole thing about TikTok is that I was only seeing it from one vantage point. I was only seeing people that were doing these dances that were mimicking someone else doing the dance or that they were dubbing their voice over something. And that is fine if that content is good and comfortable for them, not necessarily my vibe. So I was like, I don't really think that this is going to be a platform for me, but the more that I've explored it, there are all sorts of really creative content creators out there and yep. They use it for a lot of different things. And I think part of that is that so many people put TikToks on Instagram. So I had seen a lot of different and really cool and creative things on Instagram. And I was like, you know, I'm a very open-minded person. Maybe I was closed-minded on TikTok. Maybe I did not give it the proper chance. So we're dipping our toe back into the TikTok waters.
TikTok Michelle, right alongside TikTok Steve.
Oh, Lord, right? No, Steve is a lurker on TikTok, I think. I think he just scrolls. I don't think he puts any content out.
Love you, Cerruti. Shout out. We'll get you out of here on this. You've got a Cardinals game to get to. So you and Steve and you referenced the show a couple of times, Russillo and Cannell, which was a national ESPN radio show that was pretty popular. You guys did this segment called Life Advice, where listeners would write into the show or send an email to the show and lay out any random situation, whether it's about career, money, relationships, whatever. And Ryan and the host and you guys would pitch in and try to help this person with their plight. So I've got something that I want to run by you. So as I was telling you a little before, I'm an adventurous person. I like new places, new things. I figure if I stay in one place geographically too long, I feel like I'm getting complacent. I feel like I'm stagnant. I feel like I'm not growing anymore. And so I've moved a bunch in the last couple of years because it kind of gives me, it breathes life into me, going new places and getting out of my comfort zone, because it's so easy to get comfortable. And I feel like the pandemic has made me really comfortable with working from home and all that stuff. So anyway, so I live in New Hampshire right now. Boston is an hour away. Spotify, where I work, has offices there. New York City has these beautiful World Trade Center offices as well that you would love to see. They have like 14 floors. It's crazy. So I'm weighing where I should go next. And so I kind of want to get your advice on where I should go. And I'll lay out some of the reasons for why I might choose one place. So I like where I am in New Hampshire. It's this beautiful, like, small New England quintessential town. Anyone who comes to this town is like, Troy, this is you. This is your vibe. You're a small town, support local, live free or die, beach, mountains. It's a cool state. No state income tax. Let's not let that go by the wayside. So that's the case for Portsmouth. I like it. And also, you know, maybe a little stability wouldn't hurt you. Stay another year. Why don't you? Okay. Boston. Have offices there. I mean, it's a great American city, a lot of history. I'm a history guy, just like our boy Steve. I've got a lot of really close friends there, but they're kind of like my high school and childhood friends. I call them my catch-up friends. It's when you get together, you're just catching up with them. Like, they mean a lot to you, always will, been a big part of your life, but the friendship isn't necessarily growing anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so that's an option. And I'm familiar with Boston. I've been there a bazillion times. And it's a great city. I mean, I'm sure you've been there. It's a great city. New York City is, you know, the granddaddy of them all. It's insanely expensive. And the way the economy is right now, like, insanely, insanely expensive.
It's nuts.
I'm not sure if it's my vibe. I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a minimalist. I don't own much stuff. And is there any place in the world that's more materialistic and maximalist than New York City? So I'm not sure if I fit there. But my friends there are the friendships that are growing, that are going somewhere, that we're not just catching up when we get together. We're having a good time. And obviously, there's a bazillion things to do in New York City. You're never bored. It'd be a good career move for me. There's obviously, you know, the media, entertainment capital of the world. And the offices that Spotify has there are fantastic. So I'm just weighing what to do. I don't know what to do. I change my answer every day in terms of where I'm going to be, because there's a good case to be made for each, for and against. So what would you do if you were me, Michelle?
So I've been to all three places. So I feel like I do have a grasp on geographically what your options are. I'm going to veto Boston right away. Not because Boston is not a great city, but because you seemed the least excited about it. And if you're going to move somewhere, you want to be really excited about where you're going, especially if it's a choice that you're making yourself. You're like, oh, I've spent a lot of time there. It's a great city. I have friends there that are kind of catch-up friends. It didn't spark something inside of you. I could kind of tell. The way that you described it was less exciting than the other two. Now, Portsmouth does seem, that's where you are, right? Portsmouth, you said? Okay, so that does seem like your vibe and that you really like it. However, if you're looking to grow, why would you stay somewhere? And I think it's very admirable that you want to bounce around and live in different places, because at some point in your life, you will likely need to be anchored somewhere. So why not go all these different places and experience different styles of living and different ways of life? I think that's so cool. And I love that you're doing that at this stage in your life. Now, listen, I also am going to be honest with you. I am completely biased in this because I love New York City. It is the greatest city in the world. Yes, everyone's going to say, what about Paris? Okay, Paris is great. Paris is not New York City. And I'm going to tell you why you should move there. I'm going to give you a three-pronged answer. Number one, if you're a minimalist, it's the best place for you to go because you're going to be living in a shoebox. So the fact that you don't have any things is actually great for you because you're going to be living in a really, really tiny, tiny place. So it's a great fit. Number two, you seemed very excited about the friendships that are growing there. And if you truly are about experience, you're never going to get more of an experiential lifestyle than in New York. The best part about New York is that you can wake up in the morning and go to brunch at 11. And the next thing you know, it's 2 a.m. and you're in a completely different place. And you've been out all day. You've met 12 new people. You've been to four different parts of town and you're having the time of your life. that spontaneity does not exist likely in somewhere like Portsmouth, right? I mean, I know in St. Louis, which is my hometown, a city that I love dearly, you have to plan things out. There's, you know, you have to drive everywhere. You have to make sure that your friends can come out at a certain time. It's not like New York where on, you know, with the wind, you can go do something else. And number three, as you mentioned, beautiful studios with Spotify there, and you're in the media industry. It's the number one market in the country. And I think having boots on the ground there, opportunities are going to come your way that you didn't even know existed. So my vote is for New York City.
I had a feeling that it might be.
I am biased and I love it. But I just think that if everyone could live in New York, it would make them, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, like a more seasoned person, just because there's hardship there. You have to overcome a lot. It's not an easy place to live. You kind of have to make it work. There's so much diversity there, but there's also so many things to do. And I think if more people kind of stepped outside their comfort zone and lived in a place that really challenged them and that wasn't so comfortable, we might approach things differently, you know?
Now, a part of me now, okay. So I kind of have this, one of these life mantras. It's the one that I decided to, I studied abroad in college. That's the first time I'd ever been out of the country. I was very sheltered up until then. It's kind of been my motto ever since, like, don't worry about the money. It will always come back. This opportunity, whatever it is, will not.
Correct.
And so, you know, I'm trying to just remind myself of that every time, because like whatever rent I'd be paying in New York City is like an astronomical number that I'm like, that is such a waste of money. I could be using that money towards so many other things. And then when I think of all the taxes and all the, you know, price gouging that's going on right now, I'm just like, this is just an ungodly amount of money just to live here. Like this money would go so much farther somewhere else. So should that factor into this? Like, I can afford to live in New York City. Like I can't, like I would be fine, but it would just hurt my soul knowing how much I'm spending to live there.
True. But time is our most important resource, and you will never get this time in your life back. You will make a lot more money. You will never get this time in your youth when you can go out till 2 o'clock in the morning and meet all these different people and bop around. And there's all of these different places in the city that you can live. You don't have to live in the heart of Manhattan. You know, I have a girlfriend who just moved out to Harlem and got a 4-bedroom condo for like less than most people I know pay in St. Louis for their more, well, it's probably comparable, but still, I mean, she's in Harlem and it's just a train right away to wherever she needs to go. So there are options for you to live there. Also, I know a guy who got kind of a part-time opportunity in New York, moved there, took a chance, was living in an apartment with 5 different people, and now he's hosting a major show. And that's only because he took a chance on himself and moved there that things were able to evolve the way that they did. So I would say go for it, because guess what? You could always leave. If you're not afraid of moving around, if you move there and you hate it, you're like, this is the worst place in the world, you can always go somewhere else.
That's very true. Michelle, you've given me a lot to think about, not just today, but every time I tune into an episode of Small Talk. Can't wait for the next episode whenever it drops. Michelle, thank you so much for everything you've done for me, for the Small Talk community, for the people of St. Louis, and for my listeners today. And I can't wait to see you soon and get together for a Small Talk meetup.
Well, thank you for having me, Troy. It was so great to chat with you. Thank you so much for all the kind words. And just as another note, I'm so proud of you and all the success that you're having. And I have no doubt that it's just going to continue to trend up for you. You're so talented. So keep up the good work.